as I bite the tip off this Herrera Esteli Robusto Grande. It's about 3:15 in the morning. Just finished working my butt off, learning some new stuff. And, you know, it just occurs that I have to record something. This one's been on my list for a long time, and I actually had written it in so early that it was really far down in the list, and so I used the product Wunderlist. This one's going to be about determinism. The very first time I heard about determinism, probably, you know, it's just because of my age, it's been around for a very long time, was in, I believe, Stephen Hawking's book, A Brief History in Time, which is the book I can never remember during these episodes, because I always think of Black Holes and Baby Universes, I think, which was the second book. And that book was way more interesting to me because it wasn't built for my grandmother. It talked about spin one particles and pretty much everything the ether's made out of without ever mentioning ether, which is sort of funny. Determinism, I think, I have some sympathy for why people believe in it, and they're usually scientists who then postulate it, and then philosophers get a hold of it, and then normal people get a hold of it. That's usually the ecosystem of how determinism comes about. And because there's a logical path to how scientists talk about this. And so then equally brilliant people who are philosophers pick up on this. And especially scientists and philosophers and people that were abused by a religious institution, they love to stick their finger up at religious people. It's really interesting. Back to the church, not to religious people, probably more to the church. And they understand that as well. George Carlin was a very brilliant man, but he was unfortunately raised in a Catholic school who left him scarred beyond measure. And so he took a very atheist route in his belief systems merely to, again, desanctify the institution that was supposed to be an institution where he would be safe, feel welcome and loved. It is the Church of God. And he felt anything but that, I'm assuming. But determinism initially spawns out of this notion that everything has an equal and opposite reaction, and so therefore the universe is predetermined mathematically from, especially their bullshit theory of a Big Bang. I debate covering the Big Bang again. Maybe we can do a little footnote. And for those of you who haven't explained it yet to your friends, even though you've seen shows and you're like, oh yeah, there's that thing he says, please say this to your friends, especially scientists, because it's absolutely hilarious to watch their brain implode when they finally realize they've been completely strung along through that theory. The Big Bang theory is that first and foremost, they get rid of ether, which allows them to satanistically reverse what gravity is. It's a pull and not a push, right? Gravity is a push, just like water on a bubble. That's how planets exist that are round and moons and stars and all that stuff, right? I apologize to my other listeners. Again, if we're in a matrix, who gives a fuck? But whatever. When you have a singularity in their theory, okay, where mass is exchanging information, you know, clear across the universe, it can pull on something because they've got this magic stuff, which is why it's still a phenomenon, a natural phenomenon in Wikipedia. We'll say WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks would reveal ether. But that's complete nonsense. It's complete nonsense. They have no theory of how gravity works, which is why it's not a pull, it's a push. A push doesn't need to exchange information between mass. It just simply bumps into each other, just like water, and you get currents, which then go in three-dimensional spheres, and you get all of the atomic mass that is the universe. These little spheres get all connected to each other, build higher constructs, which we might call quarks and atoms, etc. It's very logical, it's very easy to understand, but we'll skip that for now. But this Big Bang thing is that everything comes together into a singularity, right? The single point in space. Now, physics completely breaks down. There bullshit theories of how everything works completely breaks down before the explosion occurs. But you're supposed to overlook that, and you're never supposed to be told that. Just like people will tell you Christ existed, but then they'll lie to you about evidence that he existed, and then everything is exactly the opposite. Of course, there wasn't a magic man walking on water and doing all these crazy things that no one can do today, and God's simply forsaken us to the Satanistic, you know, globalists that are running the world now. I don't think God works like that. Okay, we're going to get into this. The thing is if you had all the mass in the universe down to a singularity and it exploded, then the right half of the universe would look exactly the same as the left. The top would look just like the bottom. Everything would distribute absolutely perfectly even, because a singularity cannot have irregularities. It cannot have an air bubble. You can't have a wart on one side and not a wart on the other side, a divot on the other side, right? So we have a chaotic universe. When we look at the stars, they're not symmetrical. They're not evenly distributed. And as Stephen Wolfram proved in a Mathematica, the product he created, you have to have 3 to 4 unique particles in the universe, and then you get full chaos, and therefore life. I think that's how God rolls. I think all he's doing is looking at the fingerprints of God. But the Big Bang doesn't work. And then they started studying the Big Bang theory and realized there wasn't enough mass, even with their bullshit theories, to account for the level of the explosion that occurred. And so they later invented dark matter, which was forged into science by taking a big picture of space and turning up a camera to sense various infrared signals coming from space, the heat from space, and saying, there, look, there's all the dark matter. One bullshit lie on top of another bullshit lie gives you this Big Bang model. Don't fall for it. Anyone who wants to call themselves a scientist, an intellectual who believes in the Big Bang, has absolutely removed all doubt that they are not qualified to make such deductions. Okay? There you go. Why I mention that? Because that's the basis of determinism. Now, determinism could still happen in an ethereal universe, I guess, but we're going to go a different route here, because I think we, on Deep Thoughts, know that it doesn't work like that. Douglas Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, mentioned that book all the time. I've mentioned this once before. He did a funny take on determinism using a piece of fairy cake. And he had a scientist who was able to use a single piece of fairy cake, which I don't know if that exists in Britain. I don't know if that's some sort of cake. Like, we have angel food cake in the United States. I don't know if fairy cake is something real. But anyway, he said that by taking that and putting it in this particular machine, he was able to deconstruct the entire history, or I guess construct the entire history of the universe from a single slice of fairy cake by going backwards on all the atoms and figuring out what made the piece of fairy cake exist in the first place. And then he was able to create the improbability drive, which could take you anywhere in the universe in a single second, because you would become one with the universe as you turn it on, and you simply choose where and what time to be in when you pop out. Absolutely hilarious. And of course, the scientists then realized the one thing they didn't like was a smartass, and they lynched the guy in the next gathering. That's quoting from the book. Let's look at the psychological sort of motivators as to why man would choose determinism versus self-created destinies, right? There's a mathematical model there that simply says, because everything is here and it is mathematical, regardless of the Big Bang exists, then everything that I'm going to think and feel, everything that everyone's going to say to me, whether they like me or reject me, they are going to do it based on this predetermined calculation that is all mass and energy in the universe, which is obviously the same thing. It's all ethereal particles. Okay. But that's if we're a bag of chemicals, a Kurzweil primitive shape in a 3D product. We're a cube. That's all we are, right? We're just a bunch of chemicals. We have these tubes in our brains, but we have no idea how it works. Sure, yeah, you can injure the vessel and cause all kinds of things to occur in the mind, as I've said several times on the show. Okay. What I find absolutely ironic about the determinism belief is that if you look at my existential episode, one of the first things I start out with, the hook in the episode is I say to you, what if the greatest secret about the universe is that we control it? We made it. We designed it. Our creator designed it. Our sustainer designed it. It's either us or him. Those are the two things. And we simply are. We are the is. We are the plural of the italic I, the imaginary number. The plural of imaginary I is IS, is. Okay. What does someone do to adopt this sort of feudalistic determinism thing where they surrender their whole life to determinism? There is no such thing as fate. There's no such thing as destiny. You simply have been determined to exist. As the universe exploded, your DNA was pre-selected by all the collisions that were going to occur. It is their adoption and their surrendering of their sovereign power to control their life that makes them someone who believes and lives by the doctrine of determinism. You sit there as a scientist and you pat yourself on the back for having come up with this theory or having read it, understood it, and adopted it. And so therefore, you participate less in your life because it's all determined. A philosopher who then picks up the baton and carries it into the lexicon of the mind games of human development, tell you not to worry, it's all been determined. And then someone reads that philosopher, and for whatever reason, that particular philosopher talks in a way that they completely understand it fluently, and they adopt it. They surrender their control. But what if God built us? What if we designed ourselves to have a complete level of control over this universe? You do control your life. You do use frequencies of thought to win a lottery, to get the best job, to find the best mate, to have healthy kids. You infect your kids with your optimism, even if you're going through the depression, and they live a better life. They don't see, or put it this way, they see the flowers. They smell the roses in the midst of chaos. They're a lot more secure and sound with themselves. But then someone comes along, and, you know, we're going to analyze who might want this sort of thing, who might benefit from this. I guarantee you the globalists of the world, every single one of them, every monarch, every banker, every dick that serves either one of these people, they don't believe it. Oh, they don't believe it at all. Their philosophy is complete and utter control. And if they did believe in it for even a split second, they would think that they are ordained by the universe to control you. Ooh, hubris ain't enough of a word, man. I have had this experience, and again, I'm plagiarizing myself, but at least it's 200 episodes ago, because it's important to bring together our observable reality that will throw a monkey wrench into the theory of determinism, in my opinion. Now, someone could take the tact that all I'm doing is seeing the future, I guess, which is pretty fucking cool. But I have a buddy of mine that I grew up with from the age of 18 and up, because he was here in California. He was 17. He's just 1 year younger than me. This guy could jump off the World Trade Centers, and somehow he's going to land on his feet. He's going to be okay. No parachute. He could jump from 30,000 feet. Somehow he's going to live. Because he's so optimistic about life, he manhandles life. It is crazy what this guy can do. Always finds a great job. And he's not, you know, it's like he's an absolutely brilliant guy. But just the style of which he does it allows him to do the same thing other people do better. It's just amazing. But in this guy's company, as a matter of fact, it's unrelated to his particular talent for being optimistic. We used to role play together. Now, when I was a kid, I always wanted to role play D&D, but I was a only child. And for whatever reason, the camps that I hung out with, there weren't enough nerds to do it in, or I didn't know that they did it or whatever. So I didn't play Dungeons & Dragons until I was probably 23, 24 years old. And I'll go quicker on this since it might be a recap for some of you, but we were role-playing a particular game for 6 months, and there was a situation where our characters, and by the way, my dungeon master was, you know, one of the most talented game designers I've ever met. So when he was our guide, it was sick how amazingly good this guy was. And he acted out all the characters, and he was a ladies' man. He wasn't some total geek. Just a really cool guy. So he is able to describe things like a Tolkien novel, but he was able to do it quickly. Let's put it that way. So he gets us, we go down in this cave, and we find this amazing cavern in there, and it's being lit by this glowing moss, which is how we could see what we were doing. And there was a river that went right down the center of it, but there's like little chambers that people had dug out, you know, to live. And there were some elves that were living down there, in particular wood elves, and my character was a wood elf. I'd never really seen another wood elf. But there were some ogres that got down there and raided the place. And they were just in front of us. They were just far enough down we couldn't see them, but we kept finding the carnage of their raping and pillaging. And we got to this first village, and we noticed the place is ransacked, so we're looking at all this carnage. And I went into one of the taverns, and I'm looking down at the ground, and there's a beautiful female wood elf. And wood elves have tattoos, and they're a little more, you know, stout, more athletic looking. He tells me that she had been raped. And it was very, very, very graphic. We're playing this game for 6 hours. I don't know if you ever played this game before. You get pizzas, you play music. We used to play Conan the Barbarian soundtrack in the background, looped, really quiet, which really set the scene. And so I'm a writer, and so I'm like totally into this thing. But he described it so vividly, and everyone in the room is in the frequency of making this fictional story a reality. We get back in the boat. We're going to go after these assholes, right? So we sail down, and sure enough, the next opening on the right side, the other thing was on the left side, was this huge opening, like a natural cavern opening, and there's just hundreds of orcs in there, or ogres, or whatever they are. Orcs, I think. But anyway, I look over, and we see this, just a bunch of them, and one of the dudes is sitting on a throne. And he played it like, you know, it was like those dog characters in Fifth Element, where if you knock out the commander, the other guys don't know what to do. It was Corbin Dallas's negotiating tactic, right? But so he explains it. If you kill that guy, you're going to be able to wipe out all these other soldiers. And so obviously I see him as responsible for this girl, my first female wood elf I've seen since I was a kid. And you know, there's that little bit of chivalry that's got to protect, you know, the honor of a woman who's been destroyed by these assholes. And so I like being a little chaotic when I play. And my dude's huge, man. We rolled those dice for I don't know how many hours trying to find the right stats, which is sort of cheating, but we did it fairly. And so I jump off this thing and I go, I'm going after him. He goes, what? And I'm running right after him. He's like, okay. And I had to do a couple saving throws to get to him, but I did. And the way the D&D worked is you had this big-ass die that had 20 sides on it. If you threw a one, you dropped your weapon. You could even break it. You had to roll a saving roll to see if you break your weapon. It's such a bad, spazzy thing. But if you roll a 20, not only do you hit whatever you're trying to hit, but you hit for double damage. So whatever you roll next for your damage is what you get. But here's the thing. I was going to kill this guy. I was going to kill this guy because of what he did. And so I run up to him, and then they go, okay, roll. And I grab this 20-sided die. This happened twice playing with these dudes. And I am shaking this die. And my mind is so furious about this fictional story that he just told me that I'm rolling this thing, and the whole universe, and I mean this happened to me twice, okay? This is not like a joke. It built this bubble around me of glass that had refraction and everything. And I am all of a sudden in this moment, and my confidence in my chest for controlling the universe was 1,000%. I mean, had I said, I'm going to pull a lottery ticket out of my ass. It would have happened, you know? Maybe I should try that. I'll pick a different location. But anyway, I'm rolling this, and I had this feeling, this amazing feeling, like, I am doing this. It's going to occur. And I look at my buddy, and I'm almost like in a sort of funny state of, I don't think it's panic, but it was like, oh my God. I was like surprised. And I said, look, this is going to be a 20. This is a 20. Boom, threw it down, 20. Just cut the guy in half. I rolled massive damage, cut the dude in half. We wiped all these guys out. Into that chapter. But this happened one other time. But I did this, and I looked at my buddy after it was over. And you know me, I wasn't much different philosophically and determined-wise, in terms of my being honest and communicating thing when I was 24. And I said, dudes, I just controlled the die. My buddies look at me and they go, yeah, you can do that. The more you play, you'll find out you can do that. It just happens. And they just blew it off. It only happened to me twice. I had the exact same feeling both times. And it was the only two times in my life that I said, I am going to roll a 20. Now, every time you roll, you say, come on, give me a 20. When you do Yahtzee, come on, give me Yahtzee. But with a story connected to my soul, you can control it. And I'm looking at the guy who's the one that controls his whole life. He does this every day. Okay. And so I, later had the conversation with him. I pulled him aside again. I said, look, are you serious about this controlling the die thing? Because I'm telling you, man, I had a whole extra thing that happened to me. This thing wrapped around me. It wasn't normal. We don't drink alcohol at all. We don't do drugs. And so they said, yeah, no, it happens. And I took my other friend aside at a whole different time and place. And I said, dude, tell me about this. And he goes, yeah, it doesn't happen very often, but when the story's really good, that's when it happens. Okay. So what's the difference between this fictional moment where I pull a 20 and life itself? Well, if you've ever been in a fight before, the same shit happens. Same thing happens. Doesn't matter how big the guy is. If you have that conviction in your heart, it's what Mike Tyson always did. He just simply said, I see you falling. All these great boxers out there, they see the other guy falling. And the guy is a little insecure at the little, bump, they lose. Now, some of them are humble and they're mistaken for being insecure. And they're just like, man, I'm sorry, I'm gonna knock you out. And that just happens, right? What do they do with athletes? They tell basketball players. It's a full-on strategy. The study released in the late 80s. It was in Psychology magazine, but it might have been in Omni magazine before that, a long gone magazine. But they were teaching people to sit and envision free throws going in the basket, totally envision the whole thing, the flop move. And then when they'd go practice, they were way better. And so now it is a technique that professional basketball players are expected to do. You're expected to meditate on your free throws, and you can tell the guys you do and tell the guys that don't. I've seen probably three interviews where the guy said, they were getting complimented by the press for being really good players that day. And they said, well, I did my meditation on my free throws. And that's why I did really well tonight. Confidence. Confidence by creating artificial, I guess, visions of the experience going the way they wanted it to go. So tell me all about determinism, why don't you? Now, what would be the inverse of determinism? Because determinism is pretty easy. You just give up on life. Amen. If you're a loser, that's because the universe built you to be a loser. If you're a winner, well, you're just a winner because the universe built you to be a winner. We all know people that fall uphill all the time. Hey, sometimes that can happen. Because you are a ball in a pinball machine if you don't take care of your life. You're getting hit by the bumpers and the kickers and all that stuff, right? The flippers. But once you go, I don't think I'm going to allow you to flip me today. And that bumper or that flipper goes at you and you just stay there. And you're like, nope. Your laws of gravity don't apply to me, dude. And then you start owning your life and it's pretty freaking awesome, let me tell you. Globalism is supposed to gut you. It's supposed to gut your confidence. It's supposed to leave you docile, which means weak to your controllers. You're supposed to believe the indoctrination that you have controllers. That's what you're supposed to do. If you do what they say. Now, do we want full-blown chaos in the universe? No, of course not. One of the things that occurs way too often in conversation, and I mentioned this a long, long time ago, is what I call the extremist point of view to win an argument. I believe I first debuted this in the Thought Police episode, which is when you talk about political correctness. I have a family member that does this all the time, and it's a very weak-minded thing to do. You say, look, we can't have all of these words being demonized that, especially in some cases, are purely scientific, words that are never used by some people in any contextual way, the way that the slander is supposed to work. How many times people go, that's so gay. That's so gay. No one's thinking about a homosexual person. Okay, they're simply saying, that's stupid. Okay? Hey, if you want to take that word and use that word to describe yourself later on for some other thing, it means happy. That's all it means, right? If you watch What's My Line, they will say, I mean, watch anything made before or like 1960, the word gay is used all the time as happy. But somebody started, probably a heterosexual person, started using it against a homosexual person, and then it became their word. Okay, absurd. You can't own a word. I don't give a shit if you got 50 million people together and go, we own this word. You don't own it. Sorry. I can use it if I want to. As long as I don't use it against you in a derogatory manner. In fact, you know, it's funny. We do say that behaviors, when a guy is, especially when a guy is straight and he starts acting, you know, like weak, when he should nut up and own his shit, right? Maybe, and that's an extreme circumstance where the word gay might be used against the heterosexual guy, but 99.9 times out of history, we say gay for an inanimate object or some opinion about something, a movie, some stupid strategy or something. Okay. When you start to choose your reality, it's an interesting thing because someone has to tell you that that's possible. Now, there's two ways to choose your reality, and you should probably use both techniques. One is what I've been talking about a lot, which is planning your life. Plan it, because if you don't plan it, it can't happen. You know, it's like my buddy wanted $1,000 a month. I said, look, the fact that you even recognize that you needed $1,000 a month means you halved your difficulty. And once you start trying to get the $1,000, you keep halving and halving and halving until what? The $1,000 is in your hand. Good deal. Hopefully you found a mechanism that is a monthly thing that you've now crushed the problem and now you can just get this $1,000 by offering some service, some product or whatever, and you're good. Okay. The other mechanism that is used, and it's the one I grew up with prior to any scientists talking about it, but I never really paid it much mind, is the Book of Life theory of determinism. This would come up in the Midwest when someone would die who was young. And they would say, well, this is the way God wrote it in the Book of Life. God, you know, wanted your kid to die because you're going to have this experience. And of course, your kid's fine with God. And it's, not sure. Not sure about that one. I think that the circumstances of life come together where we're sitting in this giant supercomputer that is the amalgamation of all of our choices coming together. Talk about infinite combinations. So, let's think about that. We get influenced, just like the butterfly in Peru changes the cost of tea in China. All right. Aren't they coastal regions facing each other, right? So, what about that whole thing that we talk about all the time? Let's say that we accept the fact that we can control reality because it's just simply the gift that we give ourselves. We don't want to nullify our participation in the universe as creators. If God made us in his own image, and he made us exclusively, then he's a creator, and he gives us a little bit of creation power. Overall, we know women make babies, and they need men to help conceive of them. There's creation. Man builds things. I'm sending him with all this stuff that man built.
Okay.
More creationism. And there's very few limits that we have to create things.
So now we're sitting together. And we realize that if you're with someone that is going determinism, and you're going creation, or destiny, manifest destiny, I should say. So manifest destiny is over here, determinism's over here. We believe that you can make things happen. I told you about the fact I've won several contests and lotteries because I sat there, like raffle ticket kind, because I sat there and dreamed that I, or just felt that I could. I felt that I was going to win. One time I won a lottery, I was with my buddy, with a bunch of other people at this big gathering. It was a big church gathering in Mission Viejo. And they had this big raffle going on while we're doing all these crazy things, right? And he goes, well, let's go over there and do this. And I said, well, I got to win this thing first. And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, I always win these things. While I'm saying that, they're calling my name. I won. Top prize. Boom. And he's looking at me like, what the hell? I'm like, yeah, that's the way it works. You manifest it and it happens. Boom. So what have we been talking about when it comes to people that we surround ourselves with? You surround yourself with bad company. Guess what's going to happen? All those bad philosophies, all that bad victimization thought process, like you're always the victim. I'm always in jail. I'm always getting arrested by the popo. Yeah, well, maybe because you constantly break the law because you haven't really figured out a good philosophy for your life. They tell people to go to prison all the time. When you get out of this joint, you can't hang out with the same people you hung out with. And how many times I watch those lockup shows on Netflix where the guy totally has his shit together, or girl, in prison, but usually it's the guy that ends up in this other side story, and the guy leaves and he gets shanked by someone outside because he kept hanging out with the wrong crowd. I just talked to a really good friend of mine tonight and a great conversation, and she's one of us, man. She's like totally into Tesla, man. She's brilliant. And her whole philosophy of life is so refreshing. I might have her on the show if I can get her here to do a show. We're going to talk about some really cool things. But she is sort of dismantling all of the indoctrination that I always talk about when I say, look, you know, in modern day times, in 2019, the definition of being an adult is closing your mind and becoming as indoctrinated as possible with your choices. That's the way life works nowadays. It's not like the Greek philosophers that went into the universities and utterly blew their minds up, expanded it, man. They went in with maybe like, you know, 10 cubic feet of thinking and came out with an infinite spectrum of thinking. We don't consider that growing up anymore. Why? Because it's control, control, control. Oops, except now the indoctrination is vaccinations and horrible food and horrible medical treatments and global warming and just lies, 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 lies. All that's about to change, people. Let me tell you, I just heard a report tonight which was utterly, utterly phenomenal about foreign government influence on our press and our politicians. And the president that people hate so much, well, he's going to be dishing out the indictments through his AG, and should be real interesting, man. There's a reason why he says the press is going to be out of business in 6 years, the fake press anyway. But now, what if I sat you down and I said, look, this is the deal. We're going to play D&D for however many years it takes for you to have the experience that I had controlling the die, which every single one of my friends in that room had done at least once. Honestly, multiple times for them. They've been playing the game since they were 9, which is why they were so good at it. But you're going to have that experience. And once you have that experience, again, it's due to a great dungeon master, someone who's telling you the story that's amazing. It's imperative. Once you have that experience, your life changes. If you went to Disneyland and met Walt, your life would change about previous lives and afterlife and all that good stuff. You would no longer think you die and just, that's it. You wouldn't. You couldn't. And what's funny is I'll tell someone that story, and 9 times out of 10, they know what kind of person I am. And so they go, whoa, if he's saying that, it must have really happened. I got witnesses. Okay, so, but I'll tell like a family member of mine who hasn't really spent that much time with me personally, you know, they talk on the phone or whatever, and you can just hear them on the other side of the phone. Somehow they're telling themselves that I'm telling a big tall tale. And, you know, part of me is like, fuck you, man. If you can't believe in me and I'm your own fucking blood, then go fuck yourself. I mean, seriously. That's why your family's not the best thing to bounce shit off of. But once you figured this out, then all of a sudden you start looking at determinism. One is the enemy that it really is. But two, the happy news is it's time to start crafting your life. Now, here's the interesting thing I'll tell you. And it goes something like this. Let's say you want to do something extraordinary with your life. Again, could be anything. Could be anything. Let's use an easy one. You want to become a really good celebrated chef in your local area. Again, you could do this at any age. That's the cool thing. Gordon Ramsay's proved anything. You could be a great chef at any age. You need some time to get your craft together. But if you have that instinct, you've probably been kind of, you know, messing around with food for a long time. But even if it's just, you know, the past couple of years, you've been noticing you have a little instinct for savory and sweet, and you can put something together. No matter what ingredients you have, you can come up with something really cool. I mean, where do you think they're getting all these guests that go on these cooking shows? It's a real thing. All right. Now, what's cool about being a chef is that it's a real paying job out there. So you might get a lot more support for that particular extraordinary thing than versus like me becoming a screenwriter. It's a lot more difficult. People are like, oh, really? You know, do you have that special DNA? Did we find the Floridians or whatever the hell was in your blood for the Force? You know, they want to test you to see if you got that special blood because they think that those are special human beings that just come out of certain uteruses. It's really funny. But what you'll find is, in most cases, there's a lot of doubters around you. Well, you know, he or she's trying to be a chef. Well, you know, they're doing that thing. Well, good luck, you know, maybe. And then you get your passive-aggressive haters. They hate you because they don't want you to get anything that they don't have. They don't want you to have that upper mobility and power in your life, to be able to work anywhere in the world, to be celebrated for something that they have never been celebrated for, to that extent at least. And so maybe that's not even your goal, but that's how they view it. And so they take you down. And here's the thing. Here's the interesting thing about people that want to take you down. If they're lying to you, you'll never know that they're the reason why you're being infected with a really bad frequency. They're petty. They're ignorant and they're immature. They're probably people that have only been born a few times in this universe, in my opinion, at least in the human form. And then on occasion, it's pretty rare, you might get someone who really lets you have it right to your face. Some weird sounds going on in here. So someone might say, well, you know, it used to be, if you said you wanted to be an actor or a comedian, there's all kinds of stories. It doesn't happen as much anymore because people know it's a legitimate career and there's a lot of paths to get there. And so parents can even study up on it and go, oh, I see what you're doing. Yeah, okay, well, if you're willing to do all those things and dedicate yourself, you probably could get there. But there's a lot of competition, so be careful. But there's a lot more supportive parents now than there ever was. But back in the day, they used to always tell these stories. Well, when I told my parents I want to be a comedian, they shit all over me. When I told them I want to be an actor, they shit all over me. Well, at least they're right in your face. You can just sort of push them out, you know, move away from home, you know, get away from those people. You know you can't easily become anything that you want to be if everyone's around you is naysaying your dream. Very important. I don't know what to think about people that do that because they're pretty easy to find, aren't they? I'm very fortunate in my life right now. I have managed to filter out those kind of folks. I have people around me that are negative about their own life and maybe negative about the world's outcome or something like that. But I can at least easily compartmentalize them in their own little container. If you are going for something, or if your life is sort of just kind of junky, first, you need to own it yourself. You need to sit down with yourself and say, am I manifesting the proper destiny? Those people that are sick all the time are very interesting. They're sick all the time. Why? Because they think about being sick all the time. In the book,
holographic universe, there's an interesting story about a woman who said that she was being attacked by demons in her heart. And she eventually died of some cardiac arrest thing or something like that. Why? I don't know if she died or not. Maybe I think she died. Anyway, they cut her heart. They did open heart surgery on her and found out that, or maybe it was an autopsy. I can't remember. I hope she lived. Anyway, they said the weird thing was you have a bunch of secular doctors looking at this heart. And they couldn't believe what they saw. But they said there was a sort of a humanoid shape hole in her heart. And some people could construe it as a demon or whatever, but I think there was even a mention of someone thought it was an angel. But this woman may have manifested this injury on her heart with a full-blown humanoid pattern by thinking about it. And you know there's people that are that dedicated to their misery to do something like that. Sometimes there's whole families that just are depressed all the time and they're just, oh, everything's bad and daddy's sick and mommy's not feeling good and I don't feel, it's like, oh my God. You know, you see them all the time on those hoarding shows, unfortunately. Just families that are busted. It's just unbelievable. Like they keep passing down the psychosis, not through genetics, but through pure mental training to choose the worst second in their life. The irony about the Book of Life would be something tantamount to confession. Well, why do you have to pray, you know, pray the rosary? Why do you have to do a Hail Mary? I mean, I'm talking about Catholic things only. Why would you have to ask for forgiveness and all these other things if it's all predetermined that you're going to be whatever you're going to be? Doesn't make any sense. This penal system we have for praying off your sins is based on the fact that you made a choice and you need to stop choosing that choice. But if you're on rails, like a train on train tracks, it can't do a left turn if the rail doesn't exist. There's not a junction that says, oh yeah, you can go this way if you want to. Now, probably most of you go your entire lives without ever thinking about determinism. Or it hits you every, you know, 10 years. And, yeah, there's that whole weird theory. That's strange. What I'm most interested in with you guys is to make sure that you understand you determine the universe for yourself. You do. One, through the sterile secular view of everything, you simply have to plan and take action to get things to occur. We know that works. Because you can plan yourself into prison really easily, can't you? Go rob a bank and don't get away. Boom, you're in jail. How do you like that? You determined that for yourself. But guess what? Even though it's a little bit harder, you can go get the good stuff too. You just got to know you can do it. Now, is it going to get hard? Sure, probably, if you've never done it before. But have any of you... Ah, here's a good analogy for you guys. Now, I won't have references that are millennial-based, so I'm going to give you sort of a baby boomer reference here. How many of you familiar with Jeff Bridges or Kurt Douglas? I think Jeff has a brother, Bo, right? Whatever. Okay. Or Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez, the brothers, the Sheen brothers. Estevez goes by his original name, not his movie star name. Have you ever looked at those guys and you said, well, shit, that was easy for those guys to become megastars. I mean, their parents were megastars. Maybe it's Mike Douglas. Excuse me. Kurt Douglas is the father. Mike Douglas. Kurt Douglas is 102. Unbelievable, right? But their parents got them in the game, taught them how it works. The Bridges family and the Douglas family did an absolutely phenomenal job teaching their sons how to be amazing actors. Amazing. Ron Howard's daughters are all actors. I think all three of them. They've been in something. Okay. So you're sitting there thinking, if you surround yourself by these people that do that thing, you can get in that thing a lot easier. One, it has a little bit to do with who you know, of course. If you're pretty, it also helps. Musicians. How many of you know someone who became famous in a band, but they hung out with, you know, Motley Crue back in the day when they were broke, whatever, any band you can think of? they hung out together with the same dream. That's what helped. Now, of course, there are videos out there. There's a hilarious video out there, and I apologize if this is a bad thing to be interested about, but there was a video out there made at the tail end of the 80s, if not the beginning of the 90s, and it was interviewing a bunch of kids trying to become really 80s pop stars or 80 metal band people. And they were asking them, do you think you're going to succeed? And they were like, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? They were saying the right thing. Unfortunately for them, and I don't know where any of these people landed except for one guy's in jail now. He owes a buddy of mine $250,000. Maybe they changed their game, went into grunge, and figured out a way to make that band work. Alanis Morissette was dancing in triangles, doing pop music from Canada, supposedly a rich kid. She reinvented herself as the grunge icon, the female grunge icon of the 90s, right? There you go. She owned her destiny. So you just sit around and go, oh man, pop music's over. You know, dressing up like Dr. Dre in the 80s is not going to happen anymore. Dr. Dre dressed in, you know, polyester suits and was in, you know, half the, you know, he was in little local bands here in South Central as a DJ. And he changed his game. He got an NWA. He went from soft to hard. And he blew up. Okay. I mean, how many times have you seen someone succeed where you look at the person and you're like, wow, that dude succeeded in that? How many people looked at Eminem and you really thought, oh, well, of course, that kid's going to succeed in rap? Nobody did. He's this kind of awkward-looking white guy who is, you know, terribly scrawny, but plays like he's some big fucking, you know, juggernaut or something. He's totally involved with all this Lolita Island crap. It's going to be hilarious when it goes down. But he hunkered down. He's in the middle of nowhere, right? He's on the 8 Mile Strip. Didn't come from a rich family. He rapped all about that. Has a mother that hopefully is doing better today, but he had a big problem with her back in the day. Had a problem with his ex-wife back in the day. Okay. Well, love him or hate him, he succeeded. And he succeeded. Why? Super duper mega hard work. Was a little black kid. Never got taller than 5'3 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He's pretty handsome, but, you know, he was short. Didn't have any money. He became Prince. Absolute star of the stars, man. Mega huge. He didn't have Joe Jackson breathing down his back and four other brothers playing the instruments for him. He didn't have anybody playing the instruments for him. He had to write his own music and make it happen. What if that dude sat in a basement being grounded next to a piano and just said, well, why even learn this thing? It's determined for me. I'm going to be a poor black kid in Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's it. Whatever. How many people have influenced your life that never took that attitude? They owned it. How many people survived war because they tried? They were in the thick of war. And they survived. And probably the biggest metaphor is actual physical war, military war. But there's probably a ton of wars people fight all the time that are simply, you know, domestic wars. With their parents, with their families. There's this big debate whether or not we're all made equal. I got a close friend of mine who's really brilliant. He says, we ain't all equal, man. And you feel that way when you deal with society. Because people make poor choices. And most people make poor choices because they're what? They're completely surrounded and completely indoctrinated by who? The globalists. Okay. That is why that's occurring. But what is the fuel? I'm going to go into this just a little bit deeper here. What's the fuel of being gullible to the globalists? What catalyzes that event? One, being trustworthy. Being trusting of other people, I should say. You are trustworthy. You trust other people. So if you grow up in a good community around good people who trust people, guess what? Hillary Clinton shows up and you're going to get lied to. Al Gore shows up, you're going to be lied to. Obama shows up, you're going to be lied to. They're going to tell you what you want to hear and never deliver it, or deliver exactly the opposite because that was the game to begin with. Hey, Trump, you may not like what he says, but at least you can rely on the fact he won't do anything you didn't say he wouldn't do.
There's no mystery out there. It's not like, well, he didn't say he's going to do this, but he did it. Oh, my God. There's none of that. That's exactly what he says. Here you go. So you know his whole agenda. Just listen to him talk. That's what he's going to do. Boom. That's what you call a close friend that you can trust. What's the other medicine? So you're trustworthy, and what else? You're ignorant to evil. Because you can't conceive of it. No one else could conceive of it. And therefore, the world's going to be a great place. Well, I can't envision human trafficking and these NXIVM sex cults and child trafficking and child pornography. You can't think about it. So no one can do it because you can't think about it. It's not the way the world works, is it? The globalists play off that. They talk about it. They lament about that. That's how they do what they do. They literally will take an evil plan and they'll say, this isn't evil enough. Someone's going to conceive of this plan and we're going to get caught. So make it more evil so that we never get caught. No one even suspects that we could be doing what we're doing. That's not us, right? Do you, and let me challenge you. I'm going to challenge you. Even if you're in your car listening to this on a podcast, you're snuggled up in your bed, or maybe you're sitting at work, and however you do that, you can listen to my voice. Think about your life. Take inventory. And hey, I want to acknowledge, because I don't want everybody to take my hopefully inspirational tact here on Manifest Destiny and create a problem that's not there. Because if your life is good, it's good. And just take a deep breath and take care of your life. Put the money away. Be good to your loved ones. Say, tell people you love them every once in a while. This could be your last day sort of thing. You never know. Maybe it's their last day. Who knows? Be good. And life will be good. Does it mean bad things can't happen? No. Because someone could be a jerk off and cross into your world and mess up your life. It's called drunk driving. The one drug we defend with all of our heart and soul, right? But if you sit there in any cycle of your life, you're in one of your loops, and you're not happy, let me ask you, do you ever say to yourself, okay, I need to stop for a second. I need to take inventory of what I think is going wrong. I need to acknowledge and remind myself that I'm the one in control. I completely control my life. I control it from a physical planning, take action in this universe strategy, and I also manifest opportunity to change my life, to get my dreams on top of that. So let's say you take the chef analogy again. We go back. You go to school. You go to culinary school at night. You have maybe a friend who's a great chef and just pick their brain. You experiment. You create, if you're a dessert person, you go look at those crazy chefs all over the world, those, you know, 2 Michelin star restaurants that are just phenomenal. You watch every single special on Netflix and TV about how they craft all this amazing stuff together. I mean, they just do wild shit, blow up a balloon, put sugar all over it, pop the balloon, pull it out, and then they serve that as some crusty little thing that people can eat, whatever it is. But you need to manifest the opportunity for someone to hire you. Manifest it. And let me tell you the secret that Ray Bradbury taught me. Don't tell a bunch of people you're doing this, because one, they'll start hating on you, and two, you'll blow all your energy that's been given to you by the universe as money, as currency to go get this dream, and you're going to blow it on bragging. Determinism is an interesting theory, and it is a theory that we needed to come up with. We really did. But I think that the number one reason why we needed to come up with that theory is so that we could realize it's not true. Coming up with a big bang isn't necessarily a sin. It's just we do the math and we go, look at the stars. Oh my God, it's not the big bang. Wow. Okay, so something else. Maybe we're an is. Maybe we simply exist because there's nothing else to do with the energy. I want you to feel empowered. And the last thing I'm going to do is blow smoke. As I smoke a cigar. Maybe I do suppose blow fine tobacco smoke. But I'm not going to lie to you about anything to make you feel better about yourself or to get something going. If I ever make you feel better about anything or make you feel like you got more control in your life, I'm speaking the most honest words I can tell you.
And I think that virtually everything that we talk about on the show, in the comments or, you know, in me just blathering, you could take it into a court of law and really shake up the jury. And if there has to be reasonable doubt that the previous theory is untrue, we got them. When it comes to determinism, it wouldn't pass a jury. It wouldn't. There's too many experiences in too many people's lives, if not in their personal circles, in their immediate circles, to prove that this isn't the way the universe works. So how would manifest destiny really work if a scientist said, okay, fine, smarty pants, the stick has a tunnel all the way down the middle, that's why it's pulling weird. If they say, how does it work? And you say, well, first and foremost, I need you to tell me how the brain works. Tell me how that works. Tell me where all the memories of an entire 80-year-old life exist. Tell me. Because we solve for the reason why you forget things about your life. Because it's mundane and it's boring and your brain's going, I don't need this. I don't need this. It's the same old crap. It's boring. It's boring. It's boring. That's why that disappears. So what about all the other rich memories that are out there? What about instinct and intuition? Maybe instinct, they would chalk it up to your genetics. Elephants going for water in Africa when they haven't been to that water hole in 100 years. If they really knew that. Well, it gets back to that beautiful thing we call the soul. That other part of our existence that we access through our pineal gland, through our brainstem, in order to delve into the universe, to pull knowledge straight out of the universe. That's where it comes from. That's why we can control the dice every once in a while. It's interesting, the die rolling thing is a very interesting mechanism, because usually what we're doing in Manifest Destiny is to drum up a frequency, hang on to it, believe in yourself, and just like all the celebrities of the world who get what they want in life, they tell that story. Form your dream, be very specific about your dream. Don't let things be nebulous, go for it. If you want an Oscar, see that you want an Oscar, and then write something that usually gets Oscars. Don't write a comedy, it'll never get an Oscar. Just write a great script that means something to you, and it'll mean that something to someone else. But what's interesting about this weird experience I had was that it changed my vision. That's the weird thing. Both times it happened, I'm looking at my friends, and I'm going into another dimension. I'm literally going into some out-of-body experience a little bit. I was in my body, but it was as if in that moment, I went from being my body to being my soul, observing my body through my eye sockets. But, you know, it was like I was bigger than myself. It was literally like God giving you a little, I'm going to give you this Ethernet cable, watch what happens here, ding, and then it's all of a sudden, okay, while this is in you, you're going to be able to control everything, so I'm not going to let you have it for very long. Okay, think about something, ready? Okay, here we go, bing, control the die, boom. That was pretty cool, right? That's proof. I'm giving you a little bit of a tidbit of how this universe works. Just know, you have an Ethernet cable that goes through the third eye, out the back of your brain, into the universe. And that's when you sleep on your pillow at night, you feel like you're further outside your head than you really are. The universe is a pretty damn cool place, to be honest. Even in suffering times, again, one of the most brilliant things in Westworld from HBO, this won't ruin anything for you, is that they essentially said that giving one of the hosts, one of the androids, a AI keystone or cornerstone that essentially said, you have this suffering moment in your past, allows you to appreciate your life. You build your whole life around it. And what's fascinating is the writers of comic books knew this a long time ago. When Batman, how did Batman get all of his, abilities? Why did he go and research all this technology? Because he was a mortal man in the comic book. His parents got killed in an alleyway. And so he was like, I'm never going to let that happen again. LL Cool J talked about the fact that they asked him, like, why are you so massive? Like, why are you like this big cyborg rapper? And he wrote his book, and he learned that he had a horrible experience where one of his stepfathers came back and shot his mother and his grandfather in the freaking kitchen, and both of them survived, I believe, but he was weak. He was a child, and he was underneath the table hiding, and the guy didn't see him. Otherwise, he fears he might get a shot, might have been shot as well. So he determined, I am never going to be weak again. I'm going to be strong. And that was his cornerstone. Well, being determined to make his body look like Mike Tyson's, well, that was just the same discipline he used to make his music. He told me personally, he goes, look, when I was making Radio, his first album, he said, look, I had friends that wanted to ride my coattails. They wanted to participate. They ran their mouths about how much they were going to help me out. But he goes, I would be at the studio in the morning and I find myself by myself because he wouldn't come until much later. They just wanted to kind of chill out in the studio and tell all their friends. Again, they're spending all their economy running their mouth instead of being in the studio making an album. LL's in there working his ass off making his first album. The guy exploded. He was on Crush Groove. We heard 5 to 10 seconds of Radio and it was over. The guy was a megastar. And then because he built true discipline and true capabilities in himself, he didn't lie to himself. He was able to make Bigger and Deafer after that. And it was Bigger and Deafer. It was so much fun. I have a philosophy in life. And it goes like this. Anyone, if they try really hard, can do usually one thing really, really well through pure serendipity. You know, if we had 100 people who've never played any instruments or sang anything in their life or ever wrote a piece of music, and we push them into 100 separate studios and we go, look, you guys can be in there as long as you want. One person at least out of 100 is going to create a top 10 hit that's going to be like Funky Town, Whip It, Iran. I mean, you know, any one of Michael Jackson's big hits, maybe. It won't be as amazing as that guy, probably. But someone's going to create one of those hits. It's a sheer law of averages. But here's the thing. The bands that we still know today that made it in the 70s, that still perform and sold out arenas constantly, are the bands that figured out how to turn it into a machine. They developed their talents so huge that they were able to crank out one tune after another. Look at the Beatles, look at the Rolling Stones, look at Michael Jackson, look at Aerosmith, Led Zeppelin. There's the bands go on and on and on. They always deliver gold. Always. Queen. You may not understand every single song and like every song, but they do. They made it. Most bands didn't make filler. AC/DC, Back in Black. Boom. Huge. You probably will be more happy if you intimately understand things enough to replicate perfection every single time. To make a twin of perfection. Every single time you need to, you deliver. You could have one kid and get it right, and have another kid and continue to get it right. You could have been good to your spouse, and you guys weren't compatible. You go to your next spouse, and you're still good. You have a great relationship, because finally, the other person's doing the same thing back. But when it goes south, okay, just make sure you correct your algorithm, because you are determining your own life. If determinism's anything, it's you determine what the hell's going on. Some countries in this world live in a horrible existence, right? Haiti. President of the United States called it a shithole. Is he talking about the people? Maybe indirectly. They allow their whole country to be covered in filth. There's a bunch of countries like this, right? A bunch of countries that have tons of money. They let huge sections of their population to live in absolute poverty on a level that's like health threatening. Little kids picking in trash to find something to eat. Some people blame capitalism for that, which means they don't understand what the hell they're talking about. Some people think you can wealth distribute everything and somehow feral human beings that don't take care of their world will suddenly learn how to take care of their world. I don't think so, man. They have to experience that enough where they go, look, man, how about everybody pick up some trash? Get it out of the water supply? and let's take it to a dump. Let's pick a big piece of land. It's not by the fucking ocean, and let's just put it all there, and then we'll figure out a way to deal with it. We'll hire some agency to filter through all the trash and recycle it all, and the rest of it we burn or whatever. But let's not have it in our streets. Let's not have bad drinking water. Let's make sure that we get animals that procreate really quickly and use that as a great food supply. Hogs and chickens and cattle and whatever. Let's clean this place up. And then people will invest in us because why? We have shown that we can clean up our world and we just need some financing to do the steps that we want to take. Instead of never trying and the world goes, why should I give you money? Seriously? You're like the kid who just wants a bunch of money, doesn't want to work for it. How much are you going to support your kids for the rest of their freaking lives when they won't try? Not very many of us, right? If you don't live in those situations, you're already winning, aren't you? I'll close on this one. When it comes to determinism and not believing in it and believing in manifest destiny instead. I used to go back to my hometown once a year. Life was like that. One, I had a lot more family that lived in the area. And I talk about it all the time. Love my hometown. It's great. Great place. But I would go back and I would look at the opportunities and the careers that were available. And, you know, hey, in another world, I could do that. In another life, I could do that. I should put it that way. But I get back on that plane. And, I never wanted to leave, necessarily. But when I got back on the plane, and it's that 2.5 hour ride home, and then, you know, it's like 2 hours to get to the airport, and it's just sort of one of those days I just would rather not do. It's one I'm going to forget for sure. And I hop on the plane, and then I'm da-da-da-da-da, and the second I can look out the window at Southern California, and I start seeing Disneyland, I start seeing the 405, I start seeing the beach, I start thinking about my house that's just empty while I'm gone. And then I think about the stuff I got in my house and the career that I have and all the opportunities that I have manifested in my life. It all comes back to me as to why I'm there. I feel super energized to be there. And then I realized that I shouldn't have to get on a plane, go back to my hometown, simply to have that euphoric feeling. And I have to say, when I got back down to Southern California, it's been that way every day. Looking around at this place, feeling blessed beyond my dreams that I'm where I want to be. And every career that exists on planet Earth is right here in Los Angeles. Not every place is like that. Hopefully you love the careers that are available in your area. Because of the internet, though, you can almost do anything in the world, wherever the hell you are. Maybe you make armor. You know, you build like old, you know, medieval armor. And you're sitting in Toledo, Ohio, and you're like, what am I going to do with all this armor? And you're like, oh, I'm going to make a Shopify cart, and I'm going to sell the crap out of it. I'm going to go on eBay. I'm going to go on PayPal, make my own little website. I'm going to make a Facebook page, a Twitter account, all this other stuff. Now you can't even make armor fast enough for people that want to buy it. Because you controlled your destiny. You planned it. You took your talents. You manifested it. And I'm telling you right now, my biggest secret for the universe, this has been my philosophy for 25 years, is that you treat the universe and yourself like a business. You're the prospect. You're the startup at all times. The universe is your investor. You need to show the universe that you have what it takes. All of you know from watching Shark Tank and all these shows on TV, even Apprentice back in the day, you have to show an investor that you're worth investing in. And usually they want to know, you know, are you dedicated to this? Is this just a flash in the pants? You looking to make a bunch of money and sell the company in 2 seconds and not really nurture the thing up to a truly multi-billion dollar corporation? Or are you just trying to make a lifestyle amount of money and cash out? No investor wants to give you a couple million dollars. If any of you have ever sought money, they always tell you this thing. Well, it's easier to raise $100 million than it is to raise $2 million. And most people go, well, why the hell is that, man? It's less money. Because they're trying to make billion-dollar companies. And $100 million is someone who understands how to get to a billion. A $2 million person doesn't understand what they're talking about. They're making what's called a lifestyle business. And there's certain angel investors that will get into that. Your dentist or your lawyer or someone, doctor's got a little money on the side. They know they never have the big cash, but they do want to make a little bit of lifestyle money for themselves. So they'll invest in you, but it's a lot harder. Eventually you have that meeting. They sit you down. They say, tell me why I should give you money. You have to lay out your plan. And boy, your plan has to have, a roadmap to fruition, to realization. Then you have to have all the risks already thought up. You have to look at your competition and prove to them that you've seen your competition and you know how to kick their ass. If you ever say you don't have competition, be ready for a level 10, because they're going to go find your competition, especially with the internet. This is all part of you manifesting your destiny. So you take all those lessons that people who have startups are trying to, they have to get through to get successful, and that's your individual life. That's your relationship with your loved ones, relationship with yourself, relationship with your employers or your clients. You invest in yourself, and the universe will be right there to invest in you. The phone won't ring if you're not ready, most of the time. In fact, the truth of the matter is you will... I just had this experience. I'm having this experience right now in my life. I have decided to learn 3 new platforms on the internet. The languages that I program in are being used in different ways that I haven't used them in yet. And so I went in going, gee, am I spending my time wisely? I mean, I'm writing films and I'm learning these platforms. Sure enough, the second that I started learning these platforms, my phone's ringing off the hook to go do this stuff. I mean, off the hook. I woke up this morning. I missed 6 calls while I was asleep because people call me between like 7 and 9 my time. Of course, I'm out recording for you guys. But I get up and follow up with all these folks, and it's just one opportunity after another. I'm now making a choice as to the opportunity I'm going to take. And you know the ones I'm picking? The ones I'm picking are 2 guys I met who have an opening. They're not capable of paying the full salary that I could probably get. I mean, I've got a lot of offers that are way higher than that, like tens of thousands of dollars more per year. But you know what's attracting me to these 2 young guys, which is a third guy I haven't met yet, but it's because they're young, they're tenacious, they built a really cool company, and I'd rather help those guys get to the next level. If I want those extra 20 grand out of those guys per year, I'm going to earn it. I'm going to help them grow their business. And that's what's interesting to me. It's what's a challenge to me, right? I'm manifesting that destiny. Maybe they like me, maybe they don't. We'll find out. I've already talked to them once and they dug me, so I'm going for it. It's cool. I'm reinventing myself. I need something new. I need something challenging. I need to collaborate with other people. Working at home has got its benefits, but you know, you learn something when you're with other people. It's great. So your homework is this. If there's anything you need to change, what are you doing about that? First thing you need to do is change your mind about it. Tell yourself, first, if something's critically bad, tell yourself everything's going to be okay, because it is. Second, determine what you can do to take steps to change your life. Maybe it means hanging out with certain people a little bit less. Maybe you have to make some major changes in your relationships. Maybe you just need to communicate to the other people. Look, man, I'm going after this and it's really hard and I just need a little bit of support. You've been pretty quiet. I kind of interpret that as you don't support me. You know, if you're married to somebody, you go, look, if I make more money, we make more money. We have a better time together. You know, one of my major gripes in life is that the people I've dated in my life have always wanted to spend my money just as fast as I make it. Oh, let's go do this. Let's go do that. And it's like, well, when I needed you to support me while I was changing my life to get this money or working my ass off, you were nowhere to be found. But now I got the cash. You're ready to spend it all? Bye-bye. See you later. And sometimes those have been the toughest decisions I ever made in my life. But I tell you what, they were the best decisions I ever made, and I'll continue making them my whole life. As a caveat to the whole thing, I will say, be really honest with yourself. And you know, where it seems impossible, maybe that just means it's hard. It's not impossible, it's just hard. So just be hunker down and say, okay, I'm going to go for probably level 9. And even if I fail level 9, I'm probably going to end up at level 8 or 7.5. And that's going to be a hell of a lot better than the life I'm at, which is at a 2. That's the way it works. Hope you feel me. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's where you have audio, video, lock Facebook group, a Twitter account, a Patreon page, and a PayPal. Plus, it has the glorious link to Season 1, the remastered version of the first 100 episodes on this particular channel. Yes, you can go to this channel and look up all the episodes from 1 to 100, but they will be atrociously balanced in audio. And I've actually shortened some of the videos by almost 10 minutes by cutting out a bunch of pauses and that sort of thing. So if you want to get through them quicker, you'll have fun. Any of you in Europe who can't find certain episodes because they're locked out of view, you'll find them in Season 1. We're up to 41 as of this episode. I have no idea what number this episode's going to be. But hopefully by the time this gets out, I'll be in the 50s or 60s. I do about 4 or 5 at a time. So hopefully you enjoy that. But until then, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.